Hey, everybody. Inflation is a thief. We dive into the new inflation numbers and also Darren Beatty to unpack his reaction to the January 6th committee primetime hearing. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. That is charliekirk.com/support. And email us your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. We're not going to lead with what happened last night. Front page of the New York Times. Panel says Trump-led attempted coup. That is not going to be our lead today. We are going to have Darren Beatty to help unpack what we might not be talking about when it comes to this. I encourage you to listen to our sister episode that we posted. Six questions the panel or the January 6th committee will not talk about. But instead, I'm going to talk about something that impacts all of you. We should have primetime hearings about this. We should have primetime hearings about the fact that Americans are getting poorer despite making good financial decisions. So one of the moral reasons why inflation is so treacherous, one of the moral reasons why inflation is so bad for a society is that people's good economic decisions will still get punished. The moral argument for sound money is that you want people who save, people who spend prudently, people who do not live above their lifestyle, to be rewarded for doing that. You see, the West has been built on a principle of delayed gratification. Not every country believes in delayed gratification. Delayed gratification is what built the civilization that we are living through. It means that I am going to work hard today, understand the costs to me and to my time, but tomorrow, my children or my grandchildren will be able to enjoy the input, the labor, the risk that I put into a marketplace. Inflation obliterates all of that. So let's just make sure we define our terms. And we've done many shows on inflation. This one will be similar in some sense, but totally different in other ways. So we're going to talk about where inflation is today, what we could do about it. Well, inflation, put simply, is the decline of purchasing power of any given currency over time. It happens when there is more dollar bills than there is value in the economy. Now, for those of us that are conservatives, we do not like centralized power. We do want a small yet strong government, but one thing where I think conservatives have gone wrong over the last 30 or 40 years, and something that I would probably find common cause with libertarians on, is monetary policy. My monetary beliefs have changed very little over the last 10 years. There's other things I've changed beliefs on. Of course, everyone's constantly changing. Life is about adaptation. But in fact, I've become more of a monetary hawk over the last 10 years as I realize that central banks are the ones that truly control human behaviors. Now, Austrian economics, from the writings of Murray Rothbard or Ludwig von Mises or F.A. Hayek, I got my start reading the literature from these authors and from these thinkers. Some of what they write about is profound and brilliant. Some of it is, quite honestly, silly and utopian and is never going to happen. But in particular, there is one belief that the Austrian economics, the economists and Austrian economics, I think gets perfectly, something that I think deserves our appreciation and our study. Now, this comes to a belief or a school of thought called praxeology, which is essentially the study of human action, which actually was the title of one of Ludwig von Mises's books. One of the arguments of Austrian economics is that interest rates actually determine human behavior, that it's not just some sort of number on a balance sheet. It's not some sort of abstract thing, that when you lower interest rates, you're going to get secondary, tertiary, and unlimited amount of other impacts or, let's say, other costs associated that you might not have expected. that interest rates must be taken very seriously. So what isn't it? What is interest rates? Well, interest rate is the price of money. It is the cost that is required to borrow money. So when interest rates go down, people borrow more money. But what also happens is that people are going to engage in reckless economic behavior. When interest rates go down, people are going to buy things they shouldn't. They're going to borrow more than they probably should. They are going to buy boats or second or third homes. When interest rates go down and money is cheap, let the good times flow. However, when interest rates go up, the opposite happens. All of a sudden, the economy starts to tighten. So as interest rates go down, by definition, the money supply is usually typically going to increase. Inflation is the measurement, is how we measure whether or not the amount of money in the economy is correlated with the goods and services that are already there and also going to be produced. Now, inflation is something that is such a silent killer because everyday Americans have very little they can do about it. Now, there's some things you could do to be defensive about it, certain asset classes you can engage in. We'll talk a little bit about that. But inflation is such an overwhelming villain for most people that they feel as if they're disempowered. Now, this is different than other things that are actually happening in America. For example, when violent crime goes up, there is something you could do about it. You could move to a better neighborhood. You could buy a firearm. You could not go out at night. When crime goes up, you're not totally helpless. When inflation goes up, you are largely helpless. Yes, you could buy gold, you could buy silver, you could buy the VIX, you could buy shorting the market and negative ETFs, you could buy asset classes such as land and real estate, you could buy apartment buildings. But let's be honest, someone earning $55,000 a year right now in Phoenix, Arizona, or in Dallas, Texas, or in Atlanta, they're not going to be able to have the liquidity to be able to diversify in the asset classes that are necessary. They're getting poorer every single day. Inflation is a thief. Inflation is a massive wealth transfer between the workers and the asset class owners. If you really want to stick it to the rich, if you really want to tax the rich, the worst thing you could possibly do is engage in an inflationary cycle. In fact, inflation is a gift to the rich. Inflation is a gift to the people at the top of the income ladder because they'll just move their assets quicker to places where they can adjust their rates. For example, apartment buildings. People that own apartment buildings do okay. In fact, some of them do very well in inflation. Why? Well, the value of their asset will go up and they're able to adjust the rates based on inflation. Oh, rent is now $1,800 a month. Oh, rent is now $2,100 a month. Oh, rent is now $2,400 a month. Oh, rent is now $2,700 a month. They're able to go up the ladder of what they charge based on what inflation is. So when you artificially intervene into the economy, you're going to get disruptions. What did the New York Times have to say about this back in August of 2021? 179 reasons you probably don't need to panic about inflation. Inflation is by far the number one issue in America. Every single poll shows that. You talk to working people, you talk to young people, they are getting crushed by these rising prices. So what brought about inflation? Answer, your government. Your government, some Republicans and all Democrats, Republicans agreed with some of these spending bills, but not all of them, decided to artificially intervene with anywhere between $5 to $7 trillion. Now, one of the great complaints I have is the economic illiteracy that plagues the Republican Party and the conservative movement. Milton Friedman said there should be two requirements for a politician, that every politician takes an economic course and that every politician passes the economics course. The lack of economic literacy is destroying the country. Now, some people in leadership understand what they're doing. They want to do it anyway because they want to usher in a great reset and a currency obliteration agenda. So right now, today, inflation, the latest inflation numbers, 8.6%. That is way lower than what it actually is. The real inflation rate in America is probably between 25 to 30%. It's definitely 35% here in Phoenix. It's definitely 35% in Denver. It's definitely 35% in Atlanta. As we've talked about in a previous show, it's actually good the government is lying to us about this because local governments have to adjust their salaries and adjust their benefits based on the national inflation rate, which would bankrupt local governments and local communities. So actually, there's a benefit to the fact the government is so dishonest when it comes to inflation. But don't believe that number. The true inflation rate is 25 to 30%. Why did we do this? Hello, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Court packing is the real danger to our country. Make no mistake, court packing is a coup. And the usual suspects, Biden, Pelosi, Schumer, are working overtime on new radical plans to pack the Supreme Court. Look, if we do not stop them from installing four more justices, they can rig the system in their favor. We know it will be catastrophic for our court, our country, and the American way of life. We cannot let that happen, not on our watch. That's why we need you to join us. We're gathering a coalition of 1 million patriots to say no to court packing. No to the liberal agenda, and no to the Supreme Court coup. Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, so many others, and 400,000 people like you are all on board. Please sign your name now. Go to supremecoup.com, that's C-O-U-P.com, to sign First Liberty's letter. That's supremecoup.com. Do it right now. My friend Kelly Shackelford runs this great group, supremecoup.com. Do we have 87, Janet Yellen saying she was wrong? Let's play that. Thank you.
I think I was wrong then about the path that inflation would take. As I mentioned, there have been unanticipated and large shocks to the economy that have boosted energy and food prices and supply bottlenecks that have affected our economy badly, that I didn't, at the time, didn't fully understand.
Yeah, there's not much you do understand, Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen has been a lifelong academic. She thinks you can master plan an economy from her perch in Ivory Tower. She was a member on the Federal Reserve Board of Governors from 1994 to 1997. It's a really interesting thing studying Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen has never had to make payroll for a business. Janet Yellen has not ever been in the weeds of what it takes to actually take a massive risk with capital overlays. No, this is her biography. It sounds really good, doesn't it? Graduated from Brown University, earned her PhD in economics from Yale, taught as an assistant professor in Harvard. She began working at the Federal Reserve Board as an economist from 77 to 78 before joining the faculty at the London School of Economics. She then became professor emeritus at the Haas School of Business at the University of California, Berkeley. She then became a board member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, chair of the Council of Economic Advisors, executive officer of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, and then Obama put her as the vice chair of the Federal Reserve. And then eventually, she succeeded Jerome Powell. And now she is the Treasury Secretary of the United States. She's done nothing useful in her entire life. Professor, PhD in economics. Okay, what have you actually done where you understand how the economy works? Have you ever signed a paycheck for somebody? Seriously. Do you know what it's like to go raise capital to go start a business? No, you don't. Do you know what it's like to actually get in the weeds of having to hire or fire somebody? Professor, 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 board member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. This is part of the problem. She has no idea how the economy actually works. She thinks she knows how macroeconomics works. Obviously, she doesn't. If you missed inflation, you should resign in disgrace. These people have no shame whatsoever missing inflation. You created it. Senator Yellen has been confirmed by the United States Senate on five separate occasions. What does that tell you about our ruling class? For five times, they've gotten it wrong. New York Times, 179 reasons you probably don't need to panic about inflation. CNBC, inflation is hotter than expected, but looks temporary and likely won't affect the Fed policy. One article after the other in 2021. Why Fed's Jerome Powell still thinks high inflation is temporary? Fed's Powell says high inflation temporary will wane. What is Jerome Powell's background? Probably a banker, which makes him more qualified, then I have to say, than Janet Yellen. He was the under domestic Treasury Secretary for Domestic Finance under George H.W. Bush, was a visiting scholar at the Bipartisan Policy Center, member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. You got to have another lifelong academic and government bureaucrat. Cut 86. Play tape.
8.6. 8.6, a new cycle high usurping March, which was 8.5. That was the highest since 1981.
And they're all like surprised by this. What economic data are they looking at? No one should be surprised by inflation. We've been warning about it since literally 2 years ago. The only people surprised by inflation are people that are not involved in regular everyday businesses. They have no idea what it actually costs to live in America right now. You want to know why the birth rate is going down? The birth rate is going down because people can't afford children. It takes 57 weeks of work to sustain a family of four in America. You have to go into debt to sustain a family of four, largely because of the policies of our central federalized government. Inflation is a killer. Inflation is a thief, and you did not consent to it. That's the moral issue when it comes to inflation. You did not vote for it. You did not canvass for it. It just gets done by your leaders, and you're supposed to take it. It's a massive wealth redistribution scheme between the asset holders and the workers. Every day you work, you are getting poorer. Families across the nation are experiencing the homeschool awakening. Join award-winning actor Kirk Cameron as he dives into adventures of dynamic American families on a mission to put fun and faith back into learning. Kirk was recently quoted by saying, quote, "The pandemic made parents grossly aware of what the public schools are teaching our kids. It's up to us, the parents, to cultivate the hearts, souls, and minds of our children. Today's public school system is not working for us. They're actively working against us. Public education has become public enemy number one, and I could not agree more." The Homeschool Awakening focuses on homeschooling journeys of different families, explores the in and outs and necessity of parents regaining their kids' education. It provides honest answers to the homeschooling most frequently asked questions. Kirk Cameron presents The Homeschool Awakening, coming to theaters this June for two nights only on Monday, June 13th and Tuesday, June 14th, 7 p.m. local time. For tickets and information, visit thehomeschoolawakening.com. That's thehomeschoolawakening.com. We are focused on inflation. You should be focused on inflation. We're focused on the southern border as well. You should be focused on these things. But your leaders are not. I don't know if you watched the cable television program last night, the January 6th committee hearings. I watched about 3 minutes worth and stopped watching. Everyone has different opinions on how we should respond to this. But someone who has done probably the most significant work in regards to investigative journalism alongside Julie Kelly is Darren Beatty. Darren Beatty has done the tough stuff of going deep into these stories and trying to find out what was the federal government's involvement on January the 6th, if at all. This is a question that everyone should want answered, by the way, regardless of your political affiliation. With us right now is Darren Beatty. Darren, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
So I'll be honest, my instinct is just to ignore these hearings and to kind of just gloss over it. I don't know if you see that the same way. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. What do you think our approach to this should be?
That's an excellent question. And there's really no easy answer to that. I actually talked about this the other day, and my position is essentially that most people should ignore it. Most people should ignore this precisely because, you know, a large part of this is simply distracting from things that the regime would rather we not think about and talk about and occupy real estate in our consciousness, largely pertaining to the old, you know, the manifest failure of the Biden regime across a number of dimensions. And so I do think we should be very aware of the diversionary component of all of this and get our priorities in order and understand, look, this is not worth talking about compared to a lot of other things.
Yeah.
However,
continue with the however. No, that's the most, that's what I want to hear.
The however is very important. And the however is for the handful of people who are well informed on this issue, I think it's critical to speak out because we're not going to hear anything of importance from the committee, for instance. But I do think that getting to the heart of January 6th is not only explosive, it is really a precondition for reorienting our political position in a way that we can win. And the reason for this is it's no secret from Revolver.News' reporting. If people have heard the thesis that the feds were involved in this, That comes from us. The Revolver's reporting is the reason that this is part of the national conversation. And so I understand that just to suggest this is shocking and even offensive to people, including a lot of conservatives who don't want to go that far and entertain the possibility that their own government could be that really evil and malicious. To make the full case would run outside the scope of our time here. But I'd encourage everyone, especially those who are kind of scandalized by the mere suggestion here, as I said on Tucker last night, take the challenge. If you're skeptical, that's fine. If people you know are skeptical, that's fine. Don't take my word for it. Go to revolver.news, read the top story there, and most importantly, watch the video. The videos that we've compiled speak for themselves. And if you read that report, and if you've watched the video, there will be no way that you can look me in the eye or look other people in the eye and say, there's no federal involvement here. It simply can't be done. And so I think for this reason, focus on that specific component is crucial. And of course, it's no accident. The regime's reaction to the suggestion of federal involvement has been so intense. I've got so much incoming from this, as is Tucker and the other people who have brought this thesis forward to the public. It's the most subversive narrative, and the regime would do anything to shut it up. And that's for a reason, because there's so much at stake here pertaining to January 6th. The story might be boring. It might seem like a nothing burger, but this is a major pretext that our government is using upon which to reorient and reconfigure its entire national security apparatus against the American people, to treat people as domestic terrorists simply for being Trump supporters or even for objecting to the regime in a variety of ways. This is the reason we have the ill-fated and now at least temporarily defunct Disinformation Governance Board. It was to address disinformation pertaining to the election because it led to so-called insurrection like January 6th. So there's so much at stake here as far as what the regime is trying to do on the basis of this narrative that right-wing domestic terrorism is the number one national security threat. And I think given the magnitude of the stakes, as much as we'd like to ignore it and much as we'd like to focus on other things that have more immediate relevance to our lives, I think doing so completely, ignoring it completely, would be a severe mistake. But the people who should be talking about it are the people who are really informed and prepared to do so. So I think most people on the GOP should probably just move on and not say
and just
anything.
Talk about inflation. Yeah, and exactly. I think this also has a boomerang effect for them. I don't think normal everyday people want to watch this, these hearings, right. And they can't even afford to drive across, you know, town, let alone, you know, have to hear from their leaders on this. But Darren, I want you to build out kind of what you talk about, how this is a potential pretext for other, let's just say, the reorientation of American politics, that if they are able to make this argument successfully, that half the country are indeed domestic terrorists, what does that mean?
Well, that means a lot of things. If the number one national security threat to the country is domestic terrorism, and by that, they don't mean BLM. They don't mean any of these groups that have been burning down cities. No, by domestic terrorism, they mean, quote unquote, white supremacists. By that, they mean normal, everyday people who may have supported Trump, may not even be a big Trump supporter, but maybe you're concerned about the disaster that's going on at our border. The disaster, which, by the way, has been propelled by the Department of Homeland Security, and the Department of Homeland Security set up its disinformation board to address disinformation related, among other things, to immigration. And so people who just have anything critical to say about the regime. In fact, the Department of Homeland Security, there are amazing leaked documents that came out that Josh Hawley and I think Grassley is another senator called attention to. And it said, look, our Disinformation Governance Board is interested in suppressing disinformation related to anti-government narratives. So basically, any critique of the government whatsoever is now tantamount to domestic extremism, domestic terrorism, and among other things, the government is marshaling its national security apparatus to suppress any information pertaining to these things that embarrass them. It's quite amazing. And this is part of, you know, what's at stake here, what's at stake in this narrative.
So Darren, there's some, you know, facts can be pesky things, right? So there's some facts that just kind of stick out like a sore thumb. So if right. The premise is that we're going to have multiple primetime hearings to try to tell the country what happened on January 6th, mm-hmm. I imagine the answer is no to my question, which is, are we going to hear anything about Ray Epps, who planted the pipe bombs? Why was security help ignored? How many potential federal agents were involved? Can you talk about how actually the more that this story actually becomes central focus, these other questions start to really stick out, and it actually might backfire on them if all of a sudden they want to make this the most important issue in the summer, because they just right. conveniently ignore all these other fundamentals to the entire narrative.
No, it's so true, Charlie. And look, like the most important thing about this committee is that the questions that they're not asking, because there are, as you brought up some of them, there are four or five absolutely dispositive, decisive questions.
Yes.
Questions get to the heart of what really happened about January 6th, and questions that anyone, forget about the politics of it, any detective, shall we say, who is objectively interested in understanding how this whole thing happened and what was going on, would ask. And, you know, the case of Ray Epps is one of the most egregious ones, and we've done multiple incredibly detailed reports on it, but it's just, it beggars belief. It beggars belief because the people running this investigative show pretend like every grandma standing around, you know, the Capitol was some kind of domestic terrorist. You have this individual, Ray Epps, caught on tape multiple times saying, go into the Capitol. You see him conducting essentially
yes.
that first and decisive breach of the Capitol. And without that decisive breach around 1 p.m. on January 6th, the whole rally could not have turned into the riot. And so it's not just Epps, by the way. If you look at the Revolver.News report, there are five or six key individuals that really played a decisive role in allowing the rally to turn into a riot by removing the barriers and fencing before the speech was done. So when the rally goers moved to the Capitol, there was no fencing. And so they didn't even know they were entering restricted ground. So they get into close proximity to the Capitol. To people who were holding bullhorns and in a controlled and calm and very professional manner, directing people to move forward. And then when they were close enough, directing them to move into the Capitol. There's one key individual called Scaffold Commander who hasn't even been identified yet. He's not even on the most wanted list. Ray Epps was on the most wanted list briefly, and then when Revolver started talking about federal involvement, he was taken off literally the next day. And so there are all these questions. Another thing, a huge thing, in fact, one of the maybe the most dark, the darkest and most disturbing aspect of this is the pipe bombs. So the timing of the pipe bombs is such that the pipe bombs were discovered just 10 minutes before the initial breach. And just conveniently, a lot of the Capitol Police had to go there and they say, oh, it's a diversionary tactic.
Look, as you know, our friend Mike Lindell has amazing passion and especially has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now, Mike has done it again by introducing My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll save $90 on a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop this. The My Slippers are designed to wear indoors, out all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. Made with quality leather suede. Call 800-875-0425 or click on promo code Kirk or mypillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. This offer will not last long, so order now with promo code Kirk at mypillow.com, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com. Play cut 85.
A couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to question then D.C. National Guard Commander General Walker. Now he is the House Sergeant at Arms. I asked General Walker, I said, General, if the National Guard would have been on our nation's capital on January 4th, as the intelligence called for, would January 6th have ever happened? And he said no.
Congressman there makes an excellent point, and it's a subset of the really the more general point, which is how do we account for the fact that the Capitol had basically uniquely poor security on a day that was that politically charged, and that anyone with any kind of knowledge of anything would have known that. That in itself, I think, is extremely suspicious. And there are a lot of data points within that general observation that I think are quite damning. The point that I wanted to finish for the pipe bomb just really quickly is that came out that then Vice President-elect Kamala Harris was in the DNC building. And so somehow her Secret Service overlooked this pipe bomb that was outside of the DNC building to allow some random passerby to discover the pipe bombs later at a time that perfectly coincided with the first breach. The Secret Service happens to be overseen by the Department of Homeland Security. And who is the Department of Homeland Security's main stooge in Congress? That is none other than Benny Thompson, the chair of the January 6th committee. So this leave that as another interesting question to investigate that the committee won't talk about at all.
I don't think we're going to hear much about that. The curious case of the pipe bombs is one that I think is worthy of repeating. I mean, you have potential domestic terrorism against two American political parties. That should be taken very seriously. And what's all, it's both parties, right? So it's also the Democrat Party. And
right.
Why have the Democrats not been playing, like, not playing the victim, but like they haven't been drumming that up, right? Like someone tried to bomb the DNC. Like, where's the montage of that?
Not only that, but it's only much later, and the DOJ had to amend its charging documents to reflect the latest revelation that the vice president-elect was in the DNC. Think of what the media could have done to blow that up, as to say, oh, the insurrectionists almost, you know, killed the vice president-elect, but nothing about it, because there's so many extremely bizarre questions surrounding it. For instance, totally. How did the Secret Service miss the pipe bomb? And if the pipe bomb, as they say, were diversionary, that would require people to find it. Well, then how, you know, they were counting on some random passerby to find it, and which someone does, but it happens to be just 10 minutes before the initial breach. And they use that to blame, you know, they can say, okay, the breach happened because we were understaffed, because we were addressing this pipe bomb issue. There are just so many weird things surrounding the pipe bomb issue. We can't get into the whole thing. Revolver has covered it very extensively, mm-hmm. but I think it deserves further coverage, as this could be one of the main keys to unlock the entire sorry and sordid episode.
We just want the truth. Who planted the pipe bombs? A potential, you know, Timothy McVeigh situation could have happened at two political parties, and yet we don't talk about it. Darren, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Revolver.news. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.